The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
New sound on.
We'll be right back. 95.9 WATD from almost 30 years ago to the date. That was Everything Counts by Depeche Mode. We are joined on the West Coast in Los Angeles by a person who was there June 18th, 1988. Mr. Richard Blade, welcome to The Alternative once again.
Thank you. I could hear myself in the background singing along with that song.
So one of my questions I was going to ask, and that's actually my favorite song by Depeche Mode, my favorite band like yours. What was it like being there June 18th, 1988 for the 10th anniversary or 10th birthday concert for K-Rock and having that band come out?
It was actually just an amazing day, an amazing event. I mean, everything came together. All the bands put on such great performances. The opening groups, there was Wire, Thomas Dolby, and OMD. They all came out and just wanted to rock because they knew it was going to be a mega show because it was completely sold out at the Rose Bowl. And there'd only been two other concerts there before in history. One was back in the 60s with Big Brother and the Holding Company, and the other had been about a decade before with Journey. And so they were all just excited to go on, and the stage was massive, and it had these giant video screens which were state of the art at the time. So it was just exciting, and everyone had such a great vibe to it, and the whole concert felt like that. And even after the concert, it took about 2 hours to clear the parking lot because no one wanted to go home. They knew they'd been part of a very, very special day. And to this, you know, very day, if you run into Depeche Mode tomorrow night at the show there, they'll say to you that that was probably the most special concert of their career because it had been their biggest show to date. And it was just phenomenal.
Well, I don't think I'm going to be bumping into them. I'm going to be up in the nosebleed seats, but I'm looking forward to seeing them. I haven't seen them since 1990. It's going to be great. And you had something to do with Depeche Mode 101. Tell us a little bit about that, and people can also read about that in your book, World in My Eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's in World in My Eyes under the chapter Music for the Masses, which is the only chapter actually named after an album rather than a song title, but I just thought it was so perfect. I had to make an exception to the rule. But no, I've been friends with Depeche Mode for so long that the record label and their record execs, a guy called Harry Klein, came to me and said, look, we're going to put Depeche Mode into the Rose Bowl. And at that point, I kind of went, what? How on earth is that going to happen, you know? And he said, I think they can do it. And we knew that they had the potential to sell 30 or 40,000 tickets, but, you know, to fill the Rose Bowl was ridiculous. And all the other radio stations in town were mocking us and saying that K-Rock had completely lost it. And we were putting not even a one-hit wonder into the Rose Bowl because they'd never even had a top 10 hit at that point. People Are People had made right. number 11 mm-hmm. in the charts and disappeared, and that was it. And Never Let Me Down had just come out as a single and just barely scraped into the top 100 at like number 70. And it went away. So Kiss FM and everyone was making fun of K-Rock and saying that we were going to lose our butts and just be the laughing stock. And suddenly, you know, the first day they sold over 40,000 tickets. And then it was like, oh, maybe we were wrong. Maybe people like this group. And it just had such a build up to it and such a vibe. And it was the last concert of their tour. And, you know, they filmed the opening announcement with me for the video 101. If you pick up the DVD of that, or you can stream it on, you know, I don't know if it's on Amazon or Netflix, but I'm sure it's around somewhere, certainly on YouTube. You see me with the guys at the very beginning at the empty Rose Bowl making the announcement. And when the concert just came together, it was mind-blowing.
So, you know, Depeche Mode, they've been around, what, 41 years. You mentioned Wire. They've been around for 40. They're doing a tour right now. OMD, stronger than ever. All these bands, and I think back to when I was in high school listening to these in the early 80s, a college DJ in the mid-80s, and really having to struggle and fight for acceptance for this type of music. You talk about that in your book. We talked about it a few weeks ago out at the Like Totally 80s Festival. You know, we had to fight for this music. It's still out there. It's living, I think, bigger and better than it ever was. What do you think the longevity is in all this type of synth music?
Well, I think the fact that it's been around for so long is because it speaks back to a happier time.
Yes.
You know, the world wasn't quite as divided as it was, and the music was so fun. And I wish I could say that, you know, looking at my crystal ball back then, I knew that 80s music would survive. But I didn't. I really didn't. I thought it would come and go as quickly as, you know, a Britney Spears song. But not to put Britney down, I think she's hot, but the fact that, you know, Duran Duran go out on the road and sell out every show on their tour and keep going. I mean, Paper Gods might be coming back again next year is what I hear. And as you mentioned, OMD, their last tour and their last album, Punishment of Luxury, was incredible. And the same for New Order. The Pet Shop Boys have gone on from strength to strength. Thomas Dolby, I mean, he does music just because he wants to do music, because he's made so much money in the world of electronics and the internet. And Depeche Mode, I mean, they are selling out shows as big as they did during the 80s. I mean, it is crazy, and not just in America, and not just in places like Boston or Los Angeles or New York, but we're talking worldwide.
And I mentioned I cannot wait to see this band tomorrow. And I think I mentioned in a text earlier, I'm bringing my dad. He's listening right now. He's 77 years old. He's a really hip type of guy. And he's like, I want to go see Depeche Mode. What can he and other listeners expect for their show tomorrow night in Boston?
I think that you are going to be pretty staggered at the power of the band. When they first come on, they don't play a lot of hits at the beginning of the show, but the strength of the band and the presentation of the stage set with all the video and the lighting and just the sheer performance skill of Dave Gahan carries it. Even if your dad at 77 doesn't know the latest album, he doesn't know Spirit, then he'll still get caught up in it, and then suddenly the hits start coming in. And the vibe in the room just picks up. And the power of Depeche Mode is the way they are able to engage the audience and just make them feel that each show has become an event and each show is special. You never see them phoning it in. You won't catch Martin, you know, sneaking off to the side of the stage to check his texts or anything like that. They're there to deliver. They are there specifically for one reason, and that's to make sure your 77-year-old father is having a great time.
One thing I wish they would allow in these stadiums, and you'll know, or the where Boston Garden, are Bic lighters. It's something to see, like when you have a lighter sort of illuminating the whole place as opposed to an iPhone. But I'm sure at some point tomorrow, much of Boston Garden is going to be lit up by the faces of iPhones.
I think so. I think you're right.
And Dave Gahan, he's such a great front man, but not well. 20 or so years ago, he had some a close call here. It was August 17th, I believe, 1995. You were on the air. Walk us through that that day, and it's and I say this because of all the tragedies we've had earlier this week with Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, that, you know, people, they need help, they call the National Suicide Hotline. But tell us a little bit about that day and what it was like for you breaking the news across the world.
Well, it was a tough day. I was filling in for the morning show on K-Rock, who is still there, still on the air. They've been there for nearly 30 years now. That's Kevin and Bean. And they're on vacation, and I was doing the morning show. And I got my intern came running in, a girl called Michelle Gonzalez, who'd worked with me for many years and continued to until I left St. Martin. And she said, I've got a paramedic on the phone who says he just took Dave Gahan to Cedar Sinai. And so I picked up the phone right away and recorded the call, because this is digital technology had just come in, thank goodness. Otherwise, I could have done nothing if I hadn't recorded the call. And everything he said sounded correct. And I had a little medical training, because I taught medic first aid as part of scuba diving I was doing. I was and still am a master scuba diver instructor, and spoke to him. So I called Cedar Sinai after I spoke to him and got the admissions nurse and told her I was Dave's brother, because otherwise I knew she wouldn't release information, and recorded her telling me that he had multiple lacerations on his wrist. It looked like he was it was self-inflicted, but they couldn't be sure at the time because he was unresponsive and in intensive care. So I knew that he had been going through some really bad personal times for the last year. He'd been going through that, hard rock thing that he was trying to live with the long hair, and he got into drugs, and I didn't want this friend of mine to die. And so I went on the air, and I made the announcement in the hope that the record company would get him help, because in the past, so many record companies have ignored the cries from help from their artists and let them die, basically, because it's easier to do that than to stand up to the artist and saying, you have to stop this, you have to get clean, because the artist can turn around to you at that point and say, guess what, I'm leaving your record label, I'm taking my music, my publishing, I'm taking everything away from you. And suddenly they got no money, and so I hate to say it, but the business side of business comes in, and they would rather have the catalog than the artist.
Right.
And so I didn't want Dave to become another statistics. And this had happened exactly a year before with another very important rocker, and that was a guy by the name, you might have heard of him, called Kurt Cobain.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, when he disappeared, there was an extensive search for Kurt Cobain. No one could find him for 2 days. And guess what? He was dead in his own apartment.
Right, right. Tragic.
Well, there was an extensive search. Didn't anyone go by there?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, so we all know that was BS. So I went on the air, and I broke the story, and the record label called up, and it's about 6:40 in the morning, and they said, stop doing this, get off the air, stop playing Depeche Mode, we're going to sue you, we're going to sue the station, we're going to take you off the air, you'll never work again, and our lawyers are drawing up paperwork. Fortunately, I recorded that call as well, and they kept calling back, kept harassing me, and finally, I played all the calls back down the line to the record exec, and I said, next time you call, all the calls are going out over the air, and let's see who gets fired.
And we know what happened there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was accused of having, intimate relationships with my mother. He had a funny way of calling it. You done.
Right, right.
And so basically, they had to admit that Dave had tried to kill himself, and then all the press came over. I mean, Daily Mail, Daily Express from England there, and Rolling Stone and USA Today and all the, Entertainment Tonight and all that. But it was the most important thing was that they reached out to Dave and said, we will make sure that you go through rehab. We will make sure that you get cleaned up. And he had about 8 more tough months, but he was never left by himself. He could never, do what, Anthony Bourdain did today.
Right.
And Michael Hutchins had done. And, he was saved, and he was always grateful for it. He hugged me. We had literally over 2,000 letters from the listeners I was able to give to him. And thank goodness, because not only was he a friend, but, I mean, what a talent he is, And also, he has a family, and he didn't deserve to be let to die. And so I was just in a place where I was fortunate to be able to intervene just a little bit for someone who has such an immense talent and is able to entertain the world.
And as a fan of Depeche Mode and as a fellow DJ, I thank you for everything that you did back then, August 17th, 1995. And we have them here today, thankfully. Albums, quick, question. What's your favorite album? There's so many of them. There's so many great songs, but I'm just curious to know which one is your favorite one.
Well, if I'm you're putting me on a desert island, right? With just one album, that's
right.
So, if there's only one, the one I have to grab, just because it's so personal to me, and I work with them so much on it, would be Violator. But it's such a close tie. If you gave me a scratch copy of Violator, and the only other album I had was Black Celebration, I would not be unhappy, because that is also a brilliant, brilliant album. But there's so many of their records that are so incredibly good. And I think that's one of the reasons that the 80s, one of your first questions, why is the 80s so popular, is because when bands back in the 80s put out an album, they were thinking of it as an album. Today, bands put out just about 4 or 5 singles and then flesh out the rest of the album with, whatever. But you listen to any track on Violator or anything on Black Celebration, and just drop the needle on the vinyl, and you're like, wow. that sounds so good.
I wish I was doing a Facebook Live of the on-air studio, because right here there's some plastic CD covers. In my left hand, I have Violator, my favorite album. And in my right hand, this is no BS here, is Black Celebration. And for Violator, 1990, it's a very personal album for me on many different levels, which I do not talk about on the air. But that's my absolute favorite of theirs. So many great albums. Way back to the history of Depeche Mode, we have Mr. Vince Clark, Yaz, Depeche Mode Erasure. He is such an influence on this whole genre of music. Just curious, have you ever had a chance? I'm sure the answer is yes, but have you chance to meet him at all in the past or currently?
Oh, yeah. Vince is fantastic. He is just one of the nicest guys in the world. Shy and reclusive. I mean, when he knows you and you're alone with him in a room and you're just hanging out and having a cup of tea or something, he is great, but he is the person that you see on stage. He is much more comfortable in a studio working on like a lyric or working on a music progression on a keyboard and putting something together than he is in concert. And when I was talking with him and Andy Bell from Erasure, when I opened for them about 19 months ago when they were playing in Los Angeles at the Palladium, I was their opening act, and we were joking, and I said to Andy, what's your dream concert? And he goes, my dream concert would be to play at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, and the opening act would be Yazoo, as he calls it, because it's Yazoo over there. And then it would be us, meaning Erasure, and then the closing act would be Depeche Mode. And he said, I've talked to Martin about it, and he thinks that would be a good idea. And I'm at this time going, whoa!
Absolutely.
And he goes, but the problem is, he said, it would probably never happen because Vince would have to be on stage the whole night. And it's hard enough to get him to come out on an Erasure tour, never mind to play with other bands. And I said, but what if you did Yaz, and then you did Erasure, and then Depeche Mode played the whole concert, a regular Depeche Mode concert, and then for the encore, they did Speak and Spell and brought Vince back out.
Wow.
And he goes, now you're talking. So that would be my dream, but it would be a question of getting Vince to say yes, because I think Depeche would say yes, and Andy Bell would say yes, and I think Allison from Yaz would say yes. But I think that show would be a waste to be put just at the Coliseum. I think that could play stadiums at just about every big city. I know Boston would love it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would be all over that. And those are my top three favorite bands right there, Yaz, Depeche Mode, Erasure. And Erasure is coming by to Boston later in July. I think I mentioned my wife and I we're going to be in L.A. in about 3 weeks to see the Go-Go's and I think Berlin and then Peter Murphy up in San Francisco and then back here to do a really fun thing in our parking lot with a Clash tribute band called Rock the Lot, and then Erasure 3 days after that. So it's nonstop coast-to-coast music. But it keeps me young, you know? That's what we do this radio stuff for.
Well, that's great. Are you going to be coming out for the 80s show at the end of July that I'm putting together? Because if you are, then I'll get you to come out on stage and do a band intro with me in that. You know the ones I'm talking about, right? The one with Blondie, Adamant, Soft Cell, Thomas Dolby, and Berlin at the Microsoft on July 27th.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. So I'm going to have to chat with my wife. She's listening right now. She's probably like going like absolutely out of her mind. So that would be
fantastic.
That would be fantastic. I would love to do that, and might just have to jet back to L.A. Just for that. That would be thank you. That would be a huge honor to be able to do that with you at the Microsoft. Wow.
That would be a lot of fun. I just did a gig at Disney on Sunday for the Emmy voters, because Disney and ABC own each other. I'm not sure which one owns which. And I was moderating one of the panels for the Goldbergs, which is a TV show ABC. And both Wendy and Jeff, who play the mother and father on the Goldbergs, asked if they could come to the concert. And I said yes. And then Jeff Carlin said, would it be too much for me possibly to do an intro with you on stage? And I'm like, are you kidding? Curb your enthusiasm in the Goldbergs. You want to come on stage? Man, you're there. So maybe we can all go out together. That would be fun.
That would be a lot. That's July 27th?
Yep. Friday night, and then we'll talk more about Depeche Mode and all the bands out there, and my book World in My Eyes and all that kind of good stuff. But it would be lovely to see you again, Chris.
Oh,
it was so much fun at the Like Totally 80s concert.
Well, again, we're going to be out there in early July, and maybe we'll bump into you or be able to hang out with you at the King's. I think you mentioned in Santa Monica, the King's Head.
King's Head.
Yeah.
The best English pub outside of England that we've ever been to. And my wife and I have this thing about fish and chips. We don't often eat fried food, but we will eat it if they say it's great. And we've had, Boston, fantastic seafood, fantastic restaurants, incredible, best clam chowder in the world. But there's nowhere that makes fish and chips better than the King's Head in Santa Monica. Nowhere. And that is, I know those is fighting words there, but it's true.
Well, and Dave Wakeling, he said the same thing. I chatted with him a couple of weeks ago, and he said, oh, yeah, you got to go to the King's Head. So we're putting that down on the calendar for July 1st, 2nd, and probably 3rd. Three meals there, I think.
You got it. Well, you tell me when. The wife and I will join you there. Any excuse for the King's Head, we'll be there.
All right, and it's on me, okay?
All right, buddy, I can do the 2nd or the 3rd, the Monday or the Tuesday.
Oh, that sounds great. All right, yeah. Well, Richard, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and your knowledge of Depeche Mode, your closeness to them is just great for this show. And we're going to sort of go into Black Celebration, your second favorite album, or close first, and the song is called But Not Tonight, which I think is appropriate.
Which is my wife's favorite Depeche Mode song of all time. And thank you, Chris Mann, for flying the flag. You and your wife, you are great supporters of the music, and thanks for your radio program, and thank you for your friendship as well, Chris.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I guess we'll dedicate the But Not Tonight to both Krista and to Janet. How's that?
That sounds good to me. You keep the flag flying, and we'll see you soon.
All right, take care, Richard. 95.9 WATD.
So wet.
felt so alive in years. The moon is shining in the sky, reminding me of so many other nights when my eyes have been so red. I've been mistaken for dead, but not tonight. Thank you.
95.9 WATD. Lie to Me off of Some Great Reward here on 95.9 WATD. Wow, Depeche Mode. We are trying to get to some of their great hits that I really like, hoping that they're going to be playing tomorrow at the Garden up in Boston. If you have tickets, good for you. If not, you can still get them. You just go to StubHub. They were selling for $13. Again, those are up there in the nosebleed seats. But, you know, does it matter? Because it is Depeche Mode. And I'm thinking about, like, all these concerts that I got to get to in talking about how alive the 80s are all these years later. So you got Depeche Mode coming up tomorrow. Then after that, it's U2 in Boston. And then at the Sinclair, we're going to be hanging out with Dave Wakeling from the English Beat. Fly out to California. It's the Go-Go's at the Hollywood Bowl. Peter Murphy up in San Francisco. Come back for Charlie Don't Surf, a Clash tribute band in the parking lot for all of you, the listeners, on July 13th. Hope to see some of you there, many of you there. And it's a free, and it's something that the station and this show are doing for all of you. Then we have the Pixies and Weezer and Erasure. And I guess going out to California for July 27th to help Richard Blade introduce one of a big 80s band at the Microsoft Center. I mean, I have to do that, right? Let me know. 781-837-4900. Speaking of some great reward in this view, my message for this that album, which is a great album, you know, if you work hard, you put your mind to it, things will happen. And it might take a year, it might take 10 years, it might take 30 years, but just stick with it, things will happen. This is a song from Some Great Reward, the great album by them, and it's called It Doesn't Matter, right here on 95.9 WATD. Even though you're not here now, I know somewhere you are dreaming.
If this all shatters, no. As your bony fingers close around me, long and spindly death becomes me. Heaven, can you see what I see? Hey, you pale and sickly child, you're deaf and living reconciled. Been walking home a crooked mile. Pain, debt to karma, your body for a living. What you take won't kill you, but careful what you're giving. Educating. I'm wanted, uninvited, kin. It creeps beneath your crawling skin. It lives without, it lives within you. Feel the fever coming, you're shaking and twitching. You can scratch all over, but that won't stop you itching.
.959 WATD. That's off the Exciter album, Depeche Mode. I hope some of you are going to be at their garden show tomorrow night up in Boston, and it promises to be a great time, according to Mr. Richard Blade of First Wave, who we spoke with earlier in the hour. A great individual. Looking forward to seeing him out in California in a few weeks' time. And we got a lot ahead over the summer, but more importantly, right now, we're about 7 minutes away from Mr. Peter Black in the Wide World of Blues. Helping us get there will be Depeche Mode. Fly on the Windscreen, 95.9 WATD.